Han shook his head.
The ejection won't have left enough controls for Luke to land the X-Wing. He may be able to lift it or push it down with a force, but land it with no controls? No. We have to help him.
He heeled over, diving toward the X-Wing.
He punched out!
Jaina reluctantly turned her attention from Luke, disappearing toward the spaceport on the uncontrolled X-Wing, and returned it to Valen, still ascending in his ejection seat. She banked and headed toward the rogue Jedi. In the passenger seat, Master Kyle Katarn, about Luke's age, dark-haired and dark-bearded, stretched as if coming out of a nap.
You plan to maneuver underneath and catch him?
That's right.
Katarn pointed toward another speeder, a large flatbed cargo hauler with figures standing in the cargo bed. This vehicle rose toward Balin's position from a much nearer position.
So do they.
Balin's seat reached its maximum altitude and began dropping. Immediately, the short-term repulsor within the seat activated, slowing his descent. He felt as though he'd taken a tremendous blow to the top of his head, doing no damage to it, but compressing the spine beneath. Ejections were always like that. Bad, but better than the alternative. And he'd always relished the look on not Luke's face when he'd ejected. It had been priceless. A cargo hauler maneuvered itself toward his descent path. Grumbling, he got his lightsaber into one hand, grabbing his seat restraint buckle with the other. As the hauler came underneath, instead of waiting for the seat to touch down, Balin unbuckled the restraints and flipped forward, landing on his feet moments before the seat landed. In the cargo bed, three individuals waited. A Quarren with a vastly oversized weapon, a shining droid whose construction bore a slight resemblance to a human skeleton, and a tall blonde woman whose black bantha-hide jacket was decorated with a vast number of claws and teeth in different sizes and colors sewn in place. She carried a Wookiee bowcaster. Balin smiled at them, but not in a friendly way.
Two maladjusted wannabe bounty hunters and their dressed-up protocol droid.
Surrender, the Quarren said. It will hurt less.
He raised his preposterous weapon to his shoulder.
Jump into a fire!
Balin all but ignored the two organic beings. He kept his attention on the droid, a YVH-1 combat droid, one of the most dangerous machines to be found anywhere. Now even machines were giving him a bad feeling, and he could detect a life form heading toward him from straight above. He glanced upward to see a speeder car passing by overhead, and boot heels, flapping Jedi robes, and an illuminated lightsaber descending toward him at a normal falling rate. In his lower peripheral vision, he saw the three bounty hunters glance up to spot the descending Jedi. Balin took the opportunity to act. He grabbed his abandoned ejection seat and leapt with it off the rear end of the cargo hauler. Jaina landed in a crouch just where Balin had been standing. He was gone. She rose to glower at the bounty hunters.
Don't bother.
We're not here to harm you,
the YVH droid said, in tones utterly and confidently human. Jaina stared at the thing, nonplussed.
Just what have you been programmed for?
She felt a tickle in the force, warning of imminent attack, and saw the Quarren's finger tighten on the trigger. She jumped to one side as he fired. It did her no good. The missile that emerged from the weapon immediately flared out into a haze that wrapped around her, clinging everywhere. It took her a fraction of a second to recognize it as a metal mesh net trailing some sort of cylindrical package. Then the first jolt of electrical pain hit her. Startled, suddenly separated from her force powers, she sailed over the edge of the cargo hauler and dropped into empty space beyond. Valen clung to the ejection seat and rode it down another 20 meters. The next vehicle to approach him held no ersatz Jedi, no imposters that he could see. It was a boxy blue speeder, the Galaxy 9 News logo painted on its side in yellow. It drew alongside, its pilot skillfully keeping pace with Valen's rate of descent. A dark-skinned woman leaned out the passenger side window.
Jedi Horn, is it true you're on a destructive rampage?
Balin leapt from his seat, slamming into the side of the speeder, holding on to the woman's door to keep from falling. She drew back, startled, but he gave her a friendly smile.
Get me out of here, away from these people, and I'll give you the greatest scoop you've ever had.
The woman's eyes widened. She turned to issue a brief command to her pilot, then turned back, all smiles.
Let me help you in.
I'll hang on here, thanks. The new speeder banked, sluggish, and headed toward the business district. How did you know I was Valen Horn? An arrest bulletin issued a little while ago by the office of the chief of state. The Quarren watched, startled, as Jaina Solo vanished over the lip. The woman in the black jacket clapped him on the back.
Nice move, Fishhead. She's not...
Her words were cut off, as an airspeeder, painted in a stylish silver gray, dived past the cargo hauler's cab, missing it by less than a meter. The hauler's pilot reacted instinctively, veering to starboard and down. The sudden maneuver sharply tilted the cargo bed. The Quarren staggered to his left and stumbled clean off the edge of the cargo hauler. The blonde woman staggered too, but dropped, rolled with an acrobat's skill, and fetched up safely against the low rail at the side of the cargo bed. The YVH droid didn't budge. Luke flipped into the cockpit and did an involuntary dance for a moment until both feet found non-superheated areas on the floor of the still-smoking compartment. He glanced at the controls and grimaced. Every screen was out of commission. Experimentally, he waggled the yoke and found it unresponsive. This would be tricky, if not downright impossible. Unless... He turned. There, in the circular slot behind the cockpit, rested a gray and red R2 astromech. Hey there, can you pilot this thing? The R2 tweedled, ending on a sorrowful note. Forget steering. Can you kill the thrusters but leave the repulsors running? The R2 offered a series of notes that sounded quizzical. Luke heard starfighter systems dip and rise in power, fluctuations that lasted a fraction of a second each. Then the R2 tweedled an affirmative. Do so. Execute. Problem solved. Luke turned to port. Ben was still there, a few meters away, pacing him with considerable skill. Luke leapt back across, settling into the passenger seat. Did you keep track of Valen? Up 30 degrees, port 20, 300 meters. Strap in and take us there. Leia shook her head as she watched Luke abandon the X-Wing. I'm not sure how, but he thinks he has it solved.
Probably drafted the astromech. Took me a second to think of that myself.
Han did not look away from the silver-gray speeder, which had, moments earlier, matched the netted Jaina's precipitous fall. Then the pilot had gestured, drawing Jaina into the seat beside him with an exertion through the force, and pulled out of his dive. Han glanced at his wife, who, watching Luke, hadn't seen any of it. He shook his head. Jaina must not even have been alarmed, since Leia had not even detected her brief emergency. He put the Falcon into a tight curve, aiming it toward the new speeder that now bore Valen away and the lumbering cargo hauler chasing it.
That YVH droid could be bad news. Want to take the belly lasers?
I do. Leia was unstrapped and up in an instant, headed aft toward the laser turret access shaft. Jaina, helpless, spasmed again as another electrical shock coursed through her. Get this thing off me! I'm driving here, and that's get this thing off me, please, Master Katarn. She offered a very Han Solo-ish growl in response. Dropping almost to parked speeder level, Kyle set his vessel in pursuit of Valen's conveyance and the cargo hauler. The hauler now seemed to be towing something at the end of a cable. It took him a moment to recognize the Quarren. A cable stretched between his weapon and the tail of the hauler, and the Quarren held on to his weapon with both arms as if to save his life. As the hauler picked up speed, the Quarren was towed along behind at a more shallow angle. Absently, barely looking, Kyle took his lightsaber from his belt, lit it, and lashed out against the metal cylinder attached to Jaina's neck, where it lay bouncing on the back of the speeder. His blow sheared through the object without scarring the speeder's paint beneath.
Better?
Actually, yes.
Jaina lay there a few more moments, then began struggling with the net. It had relaxed, no longer constricting or clinging to itself, and she was able to unwrap it within moments.
Electrical shocks.
Interfering with your control over the Force, which turns you from a Jedi into a rather weak gymnast with a spasming problem.
That's one way to put it.
The Galaxy 9 newspeeder reached the edge of the business district before any of the vehicles pursuing it caught up. It shot through the cleft between skyrises that constituted the end of the spaceport zone and dropped toward lower traffic lanes. The bounty hunter cargo hauler followed, descending at an angle not recommended for such a big, ungainly vehicle, still trailing the Quarren, who looked increasingly frantic. Then came Jaina and Kyle in their speeder, the Falcon, Luke and Ben, and finally a stream of speeders with Jedi, spaceport security, press, and more bounty hunters intermixed.
Whoa!
Kyle put the speeder into a side-to-side evasive maneuver an instant before the YBH droid in the cargo hauler opened fire. Streams of blaster fire flashed beside his door, then just above Jaina's head, then immediately under the fuselage. A pulse of laser fire, four brilliant red streams converging so closely that they seemed to be one, crossed from above and behind the speeder to hit the YBH droid dead center in the chest. The droid was catapulted off its feet and smashed through the rear of the hauler's control cab, disappearing completely. Smoke poured out of the cab, and the hauler began to nose forward into a shallow dive. Jaina craned her neck back to see the Falcon pacing the speeder at a higher altitude. She waved at her mother, clearly visible in the underside turret. Thanks, Mom.
Most mothers just pack a lunch.
Kyle put on a burst of speed, accelerating toward the new speeder.
You want to try another jump?
I guess.
Jaina checked her lightsaber, then clipped it to her belt. Another speeder, black with arrow-tipped white stripes on the sides, open-topped, raced past Kyle's. It was no civilian vehicle. The roar from its engines was similar to that of a pod racer. It was a two-seater, and the pilot was the bounty hunter who dressed as a Jedi. Beside her was a man Jaina had barely glimpsed at Luke's arrest, a Rodian holding an unusually long blaster rifle scoped in his hands. As they roared past, the woman gave Kyle and Jaina a wave. The striped racer dipped low and passed the newsspeeder moments later. Jaina saw the passenger turn, raise his weapon, and fire at the news vehicle. It was not a destructive shot. It was surgical. Smoke began issuing from the newsspeeder. It wobbled, probably from a fright reflex on the part of the pilot. Moments later, viewports all over the vehicle opened, allowing smoke to pour out everywhere. Luke took a moment to assess the vista before him. The newsspeeder was clearly doomed, so Valen would be abandoning it as soon as possible. Take me over it, just to one side. Ben nodded and put on more speed. Crowding the edge of the traffic lane, he passed below the Falcon, then above Master Katarn and Jaina. Drawing near the newsspeeder, he maintained his higher altitude, but sideslipped to port, putting Luke directly above the speeder's roof. Once again, Luke looked down into the face of Valen Horn. He flipped over the side and landed at the rear of the speeder's roof, stabilizing himself through the force. Valen flipped up to the roof.
Wish you'd taken longer with that X-Wing.
Luke gestured at the lightsaber Valen carried, not Valen's own. It was a very simple cylinder of shining steel.
Did that belong to your nurse?
Yes.
Valen switched it on.
It's not very stylish, but
that's enough.
Luke advanced, activating his own lightsaber. Valen raised his in a preliminary block. Luke struck, twitching his blade out of the most obvious line of attack, and the blade sheared the hilt of Valen's weapon in two, not harming him. Valen's blade switched off as the weapon's lower half dropped into the darkened urban chasm below. Valen took a step back, the last step he could afford before dropping off the front of the speeder. But Luke's advance was near instantaneous. The Grandmaster slammed the butt of his own weapon into Valen's temple. Valen Horn dropped like a slaughterhouse bantha. Luke caught his topcoat lapel, keeping him from following the lightsaber wreckage into the depths.
Chapter 6.
The pilot of the newsspeeder needed no urging from Luke. He picked the nearest plausible landing spot, a portion of a 20th-story altitude pedestrian walkway broad enough for two starfighters to land abreast, and set down. Immediately, all the pursuit vehicles set down on one side or the other of it, all but the Falcon, which rose, looking for a broader landing area. Jaina, Kyle, and Ben joined Luke. At his instant order, they stood at the four corners of the newsspeeder, lightsabers unlit, but in hand, and waved the oncoming security troopers, press, and onlookers back. The security troopers, no ranking officer present, hesitated in the face of unthreatening but armed Jedi resistance, and simply formed up lines, keeping the press and observers at bay, barring the exit paths of the Jedi. Kip Duran and Jedi Knight Doran Taner arrived moments later, filling in the Jedi line, and Luke could see other Jedi speeders moving in for agile illegal landings. Luke shook his head.
This is going to be a real mess.
Going to be? Kip looked amazed. Are you trying for some galactic record in the understatement event?
The dark-haired female bounty hunter and her Rodian companion arrived, showed identification to the spaceport security officers, and moved through their line, confronting Luke. The woman smiled with what seemed like genuine good cheer.
Care to surrender the prisoner? It will save everybody trouble.
Luke shook his head.
We'll manage this. You can save everyone a lot of trouble by convincing the security forces to fall back and leave us to our business.
She shook her head.
The Chief of State has ordered us to take the rogue Jedi into custody. Surely you've heard of her, Natasi Dalla?
I have, but I haven't heard of you. Who are you?
She offered him a slight bow.
Zelash Kul. Not, I'm afraid, at your service.
You're not a Jedi.
She nodded.
And may I present Kadit?
The Rodian offered a minimal glance in Luke's direction, but he clearly had his eye on the growing numbers of Jedi and GA security personnel. The noise was incredible. The Falcon's repulsors howling, people shouting.
Stand back! Stand back! GA security has jurisdiction here!
Hand over the prisoner. This is not your jurisdiction.
Take one more step and you'll be picking your nose with a prosthetic.
Luke, when did you first realize you were a criminal?
Master Silgal was among the later Jedi arrivals. The security troopers let her enter, and she injected Valen with enough sedatives to keep a Wampa unconscious for a couple of days. But the security troopers and bounty hunters clearly would not open ranks to permit the Jedi to carry Valen out. Zalash and Kadit took the opportunity to retreat to the security lines. Han and Leia forced their way into the Jedi circle. Han stared out at the thickening lines of security troopers and shook his head.
This is getting way out of control, old buddy.
Luke nodded.
GA security has legal jurisdiction. Those others have a profit motive, and all we have is the fact that we're right. No one's going to back down until someone gets hurt.
Ben gestured towards someone in the security ranks.
There's a familiar face.
Luke peered in that direction. Captain Savar stood there, waving the security men and women around him to silence.
This could help, Luke said.
Leia's expression was one of irritation.
It certainly couldn't hurt.
Luke calculated odds and resources. He now had 20 Jedi here, including 6 Masters. If violence erupted, the security troopers would be slaughtered. Or perhaps not, depending on how well their 2 bounty hunter allies fared. Luke gestured until he got Captain Savar's attention. The officer headed his way, ignoring the guns at his back and lightsabers ahead of him until he stood before Luke.
Quite a mess you Jedi have made here.
Luke shook his head.
It would have been a lot worse without us here. Is there any way you can pack those bounty hunters into a spent fuel drum or something?
I wish. That's not on the list of options.
Luke felt as glum as the man looked.
Well, we've got to figure something out. One twitch like your boy had yesterday, and we're going to have blaster bolts, arms and legs, and who knows what else flying everywhere.
So hand Valen Horn over.
How do you know his name?
He was caught on holocam and identified when he stole a classic starfighter and crashed a Kuwati shuttle at the Senate building.
Tell you what. You conduct us all to the Jedi Temple, and we'll let you have an observer on hand while we study Jedi Horn to see what's wrong.
Why would we want you to study our prisoner?
Han and Leia, breaking from a bout of hurried consultation, stepped forward. Leia's voice was at her most diplomatic. This was the voice she'd used for all her Chief of State speeches.
Grandmaster, Captain, I believe my husband and I can offer a solution that will defuse the immediate situation.
Captain Savar gave her a not entirely hopeful look.
Please.
Mon Mothma Memorial Medical Center is pretty close to equidistant between the temple and the Senate building. That makes it a sort of halfway point for respective jurisdictions. Let's take Jedi Horn there. It's a secure facility and an enclosed space, so we can limit the number of people with access to the situation. Say, 6 Jedi and 6 security agents.
Han nodded.
And no bounty hunters or press. None living, anyway.
Savar considered, took a look at the growing number of press and onlookers arriving, and nodded. He looked back over his shoulder.
Karn, commandeer a civilian vehicle suitable for carrying 15 or more, with a civilian driver. We need it here, now.
Yes, sir!
A broad-shouldered male trooper pushed his way through the ranks of security troopers and onlookers, then set off at a dead run. It was almost a recreation of the previous day's events in the Temple Medical Center, but with a bigger and more diverse cast. Jedi, troopers, and the Horns waited for the doctor's reports, while Valen lay unconscious. News of the rampage spread like a tenement fire through the news nets, and the Jedi had little to do but watch the news coverage for the first several hours. It wasn't good. Amateur recording showed Valen's dressing robe paranoia outside the hostel the previous morning. Commentators asked why the Jedi had not surrendered him to the authorities then, which would have prevented today's outrage. Luke's arrest was briefly covered, with many angles on the Jedi, lightsabers lit, looking menacing. There were security recordings of Valen performing overrides on the X-Wing and shuttle security, followed by gloriously detailed scenes of the shuttle smashing out of the Senate building and crashing nearby. And then Valen's final rampage, covered in exacting detail by high-quality holorecorders and far too many members of the press. Analysts cast the Jedi Order in the guise of ungoverned, unprincipled superhumans content to gratify themselves whatever the cost might be to the common population. Every Jedi, a potential Jacen Solo. No such stigma was attached to Luke Skywalker. His benevolence was too well known, too ingrained in the public consciousness. Instead, he was cast as an out-of-touch autocrat, kindly but dangerously clueless, dedicated to a culture of entitlement that was decades behind the times. After the ninth news cycle, Leia heaved a sigh.
I can feel the public turning against us from here. Minds are slamming shut like malfunctioning turbolift doors.
Luke gave her a glum look of agreement. Any recommendations?
Dala's masters of reinterpretation already have the public half convinced that the only way to save civilization is to muzzle the Jedi. You need to prepare yourself for a fight.
The civilian doctors studying Valen reported just what Silgall had. High stress levels, no physical abnormalities, no evidence of poisoning or drugs, no way to test his neurological functions. Jason's scanner scrambling technique stayed in effect, even as Valen remained under heavy sedation. By the next day, Luke and Captain Savar had agreed on a reduced number of observers from each camp, the Horns not to count against the Jedi total. Luke returned to his duties. The government prepared a case against Valen Horn and cleared dockets to advance Luke's first hearing. Nawara Venn confirmed that the prosecutors were exploiting Valen's actions for all they were worth. The situation was very, very bad for Luke's case. As Nawara explained it,
the public is still hurting from a war where everybody suffered and nobody gained. A war worsened by a Jedi. They're pretty worked up. They want someone to take responsibility for Jacen Solo. They want a change they can point to, a change that means problems like Jacen Solo and Valen Horn will never happen again. You can tell them all you want that muzzling the Jedi won't fix things. It's what they want, and they're turning against you.
It was true. Jedi on ordinary missions were booed. Ordinary people they dealt with were suddenly unhelpful, stalling investigations. And not just on Coruscant. The news, spreading throughout the Alliance space, caused anti-Jedi sentiment to swell like a pond ripple that never seemed to weaken. Jaina, assigned at her own request to be the Imperial Remnant Jedi liaison, suffered catcalls and was even thrown filth while in Jag's company. Public speaking engagements, for which Jedi had been solicited months earlier, were canceled. A years-old academic thesis proposing that interacting with the Force contributed to a tendency toward madness was uncovered and redistributed, and its author, now an obscure philosophy professor on Corellia, was suddenly the darling of interview shows. Valen slept through it all, fruitlessly studied by doctors and chronicled by the press. The Unification Summit moved on, relegated to second-tier news coverage.
Perhaps the sudden absence of spotlights was a boon. Political analysts reported promising responses from the Imperial Remnant and the Confederation. A week after Valen's rampage, Luke went to bed, lay sleepless for 3 hours, then rose and dressed again. He walked the temple halls for the next several hours. The Jedi he passed sensed his deep immersion in his thoughts and did not trouble him. Ben watched him during the hour he paced the Great Hall. Then, distressed but unable to help, he went to his quarters to spend his own sleepless night. 2 hours before dawn, Luke used the comlink in his quarters to make a series of quick calls. Not long thereafter, on foot, he approached the Senate building. In a few hours, participants in the Unification Summit would collect again, but for now, it was a still office building. He was greeted with courtesy at the main entrance and escorted to the floor where the Chief of State's offices were located. Outside those offices, another set of guards offered equal courtesy, but required him to hand over his lightsaber and submit to a brief full-body scan, which he did. Then finally, he was conducted into a large inner office, one darkened and unoccupied in this pre-dawn hour. An aide activated the overhead lighting and offered him caff. He declined, and the aide left. The office showed that this chief of state had different aesthetic sensibilities than Jacen Solo or Cha Nyathol, who had preceded Dalla in the position. Jacen had preferred natural woods and landscape tones, though his taste had graduated toward even darker decor in his last months. Nyathol, a Mon Calamari, had preferred militaristic themes in blues and greens. Dalla, it seemed, chose to surround herself with the trappings of the old empire. Her personal office gleamed white, with desks, chairs, and computer equipment that could all have been recently transferred from the bridge of a Star Destroyer. The door behind him hissed open, and Luke turned to see Dalla enter. The Chief of State was once again in Admiral's whites. Guards waited in the hall outside, their forbidding expressions directed at Luke, vanishing as the door closed. Dalla extended her hand.
Master Skywalker.
Luke rose and shook it.
Chief Dalla.
She moved around him to sit at the main desk.
Please, sit.
He did. It was a little odd. He had expected to feel something from her. Anger or resentment, or a desire for vengeance. But he could detect no strong emotions, no aggression.
Something to drink?
He shook his head. The Chief of State propped her elbows on her desk and rested her chin atop interlaced fingers.
When my staff tells me that the Jedi Grand Master wishes to see me, I take it as a serious matter, even if we are locked in legal battle. And I assume, when the message does not indicate a purpose for the meeting, that it is one best expressed face to face. So, here we are, face to face. What can I do for you, or you for us?
I'm actually not 100% sure. Earlier this evening, I had a feeling that we should meet. A presentiment in the Force.
What did it mean?
I'm not certain, but I suspect it means that somewhere I now have the argument that will convince you to drop the case. Whether that's true or not, I have to be here. It might actually mean that I need to be in your presence when someone makes an attack on you.
Perhaps the Force was telling you that you need to be here to suddenly discover that I'm just an imposter with Dalla's face, and that you need to cut me down.
No.
Well then, let's wait and find out.
Yes.
You will let me know if you change your mind about Caff.
Yes.
Or sweet cakes?
Luke sighed. The impulse that had brought him here seemed no closer to revealing itself, and Dalla clearly thought he was wasting her time.
While we're waiting for the Force to announce its presence, she said, I did want to say something. I want you to understand this suit is not personal. Even when we were on opposite sides, representing enemy forces, I had every respect for you. In reviewing your records, it became clear to me that you have had a significant and beneficial effect on the galaxy.
Luke raised an eyebrow. But you still need so very much to make the Jedi a mindlessly obedient branch of the government that you're pursuing the trial.
It's not about obedience.
Oh, that's right. It's about not detecting a Jedi turning to evil. which we should be able to do far more easily than, say, noticing an Imperial leader growing so callous that he'd obliterate an entire innocent world to convince other worlds to obey. Dalla became very still. Her face gave away no emotion, but Luke could feel, just for a moment, the pain she had experienced long ago as her love, respect, and even understanding for Grand Moff Wilhelm Tarkin withered and faded in the wake of the atrocities he had committed in the Emperor's name. Luke was sorry to make her relive that, but she clearly wanted to exchange blows, and Luke was not unarmed in this match. She regained her composure a moment later.
"It's not about that, either. You're as guilty of not detecting Jason Solo's turn to evil as others were of not checking the excesses of Imperial officers. But that's not why you're being tried. It's just the argument that will allow us to convict you."
"Why am I being tried, then? Give me the next layer of truth. Or the next layer below that."
"It has to do with fairness and responsibility and the rule of law."
"Things the Jedi have always supported."
"Things the Jedi have always subverted, at least under your leadership."
Luke couldn't keep his astonishment from his face or voice.
"That's ridiculous."
"Let me give you a hypothetical example. A Coruscant bar in seedy sublevels. Two patrons decide they don't like the looks of a third. They assault him. A Jedi intervenes. Out come blaster pistols and a lightsaber. Whoosh, whoosh. Severed arms litter the barroom floor. Law enforcement officers are called. The Jedi gives them a terse statement and then flits off to his next adventure."
Luke nodded. "That's a simplistic and overly colorful way of putting it, but yes, it happens." It had, in fact, happened almost exactly that way to him, with Luke in the role of the patron about to be assaulted, back before he was a Jedi himself, many years before.
"Do you not see anything wrong with the way the situation was resolved?"
"Not really."
"First, there's the maiming of the suspects. Would it have been possible for the Jedi to have defeated them without cutting off their arms?"
Luke nodded. "Possibly, probably. But once the blasters came out of their holsters, the situation became a lot more dangerous for everybody, patrons and Jedi included."
"Could the Jedi have disarmed them with some use of the Force?"
"That does happen, but we know the Jedi in your example made the correct choice."
"How so?"
He was not just reacting to what he saw with his eyes and knew from his experience. He was in tune with the Force. The Force alerted him to the true level of danger, and he responded appropriately.
"Sad that the Force can never be sworn in to testify about the suggestions it offers to the Jedi."
"True."
"Or to the Sith. The Force talks to the Sith, too, doesn't it?"
Luke blinked. "The dark side of the Force, yes."
"You didn't say your Jedi was only listening to the bright side."
"Light side."
"Yes, thank you. You just said the Force. But let's stipulate that the good Force is the only one our hypothetical Jedi listens to. It still suggests maiming an awful lot of the time."
"Hardly a life sentence of disfigurement and handicap. Modern prosthetics are indistinguishable from flesh and bone." He held up his own prosthetic hand, waggling his fingers at her as evidence.
"Though they have to be paid for by someone, often the state."